You're listening to the Spuddy Dude Radio Network. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode on the Spuddy Dude Radio Network. I'm Jack Joyner, your friendly neighborhood webmaster of the website that powers this very podcast, the executive producer of the Spuddy Dude Radio Network. As always, we have to thank our patrons that help support the website and the podcast network over on patreon.com/SpuddyDudeNetwork. Patrons such as Allison, Cindy, Ed, Georgia, Greg, Janelle, Jessica, Jurgen, Catherine, Kale, Laura Howard, Lump Moose, Master Dramon, Phoenician, Scott, Vanessa, Vicky, Winnipeg Webhead, Greg, Lisa, UltimateFangirl.exe, Kigar, Sarah Petzl, Scott McGraw, Sebastian, and Venkman. Thank you guys for your support over on patreon.com/SpideyNetwork. If you have not checked out our other fine shows on the network, we have Clone Soccer Chronicles and Spectacular Radio. We have ASM Classics, this show, the Sal Buscema Era Podcast, Voices from the Eerie, a Gargoyles Podcast, Spidey Dude Experience, and Make Mine Mayday. The Spidey Dude Experience is the flagship show on the network now, and we also have a show within a show, just like this show, with the Slot Symposium. This show has the Web of Music show that if you've not already checked out those episodes here on this feed, you should definitely do so. They're a lot of fun. Once again, I want to thank Chris for hosting, and thank you for supporting the website, and leave us that 5-star review. Let us know how we're doing here on the Spidey Dude Radio Network. With that, I turn it over to Chris.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Spectacular Sal Buscema Era Podcast here on the Spidey Dude Radio Network. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Web Slingers. And I'm Drew, coming back. Really excited.
Tonight, we are talking about a two-part storyline before we get to a huge episode that's going to be 6 issues covered in one episode. Yes, oh boy, it's going to be quite the ordeal, but That's a story for another time, true believers. This is Spectacular Spider-Man issues 176 and 177, introducing a brand new villain who only ever makes one more appearance after this.
What?
Yeah. Great use of a character, huh?
Of course. It's true Marvel.
Yeah, basically. You know, they could pull her out of mothballs and do something with her once again, but I digress. Yeah, Corona is introduced in these two-parters, kind of like our previous villains, Night and Fog. Who are never seen again. Corona makes one more appearance after this, and it's not for a few more years until, 1994, right after Maximum Carnage in Spider-Man Unlimited number 3 is a backup story behind the Doc Ock origin story. So, I digress, unfortunately. Cool idea for a villain, and we'll get into it. The Spectacular Spider-Man issue 176, with a release of May of 1991, has a guest writer for this issue, because we're about to launch into the run of JMD Mateus writing Spider-Man, but we have Kurt Busiek filling in for a couple issues, who would, of course, go on to big Spider-Man fame with Untold Tales of Spider-Man and help create the Thunderbolts. Sal Buscema as artist, Chris Eliopoulos as guest letterer. I think this is the same guy who goes on to work with Eric Larson.
Yes.
Right, on Savage Dragon. Mm-hmm. Bob Sharon on colorist, Danny Figueroth on editor, and Tom DeFalco, master planner. Just Ed Tom DeFalco recently just did quite an awesome interview with me about late great artist of friend of his, Paul Ryan. So stay tuned for more of that information in the future, as I develop that project more. Anyway, the power of love. Spider-Man is swinging through the streets and sees a woman collapse and brings her to the hospital, only to find out it's connected to this rather shady organization that happens to be doing experiments on people in order to basically give them watered-down superpowers. But I digress. Spider-Man runs off after hearing some gunfire when the local security team happens to be fighting the souped-up Golden Girl vigilante that Spider-Man thinks he could help with. He thinks he can help with, but unfortunately she wants no help whatsoever as she explains the origin story to Spider-Man after he finally catches up to her about how much a piece of crap her boyfriend is. Spider-Man comes home to his apartment with Mary Jane and she is doing her aerobics and she collapses as we come to find out that the company that Spider-Man and Joy from Daily Bugle were investigating are responsible for the people of New York being poisoned by the same affliction that afflicted the sister of the wannabe brand corporation kind of guy. Spider-Man thinks that he's able to help her, but in the end ends up accidentally mutating her further into a horrible, disgusting looking creature. To be continued. So, in the first big wide shot panel, we have some weird coloring buildings behind Spider-Man, Drew. Brown, purple, green. Do you think that's just lazy way of coloring?
That's very much a hi. We were under much stress to get this done as quick as possible, and I'm just gonna choose a color and go.
Basically,
no one's gonna pay attention to that. So why should we?
No, you of know? Course. The wannabe brand corporation douchebag is Cedric Forrester, and just like his sister, only makes one other appearance later on.
Yeah, there's very. Like, talk about an absolutely unsympathetic character. I mean, he's just an absolute jackass. He's intelligent. He's rich. He doesn't give a fuck what he has to do to get his quote-unquote results.
Yeah. And, well, he's a complete douche. And then, like, you kind of find out that his sister was the exact same way, but he decided to experiment on his sister before she could obviously probably do it to him. And the only reason why there's any kind of sympathy is because she's the victim with the powers forced on her. But they were both complete and utter, you know, a-holes.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, there you've seen Spider-Man stories where some of the characters have at least some sympathy for a villain. Maybe things didn't turn out great or anything like this. This one was like, there's no sympathy. These are just horrible people, and one of them was more horrible to the other. So, but yeah, but like you said, I digress.
Moving on through the issue, when she attempts to escape, it's a rather bad way of Peter ducking into a broom closet to come out as Spider-Man to help with the problem. Like, nobody's like, where did Peter Parker go when Spider-Man just appears? I mean, I know it happens all the time, but in this case, it seems very, like, just too obvious.
Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, it's a staple of the character, but it kind of makes you really appreciate that at least Superman in DC had a phone booth. Or at least a broom closet, because at least it's a decent, consistent thing. Like, you know, you wouldn't think some random person like, hey, wasn't, didn't Peter go that way? And then Spider-Man, like, you think maybe they're the same guy? You know? I don't know.
Yeah. When the security team, what are they? It's like flame retardant foam or something.
Yeah.
And then he grabs her by the hair, and it's so cringy the way he's like talking to her and touching her and treating her. But again, I guess she was like the worst boss ever prior to this mutation happening.
Yeah. So again, these are non-sympathetic characters. So you're kind of just rooting for them to get a little messed up. Cause I was like, it's called karma. Like, You know, you can't just be miserable to people all the time, because then they're going to be miserable back. Like,
I also want to point out that Corona's bathing suit costume is exactly what Mary Jane is wearing.
Oh, God. I didn't even notice that.
Yep. One's purple. One's orange. Just saying.
No, I know.
Also, the other thing is Mary Jane just does not strike me as somebody who's supposed to be like 22 years old, because, you know, you got to think about, like, Peter and Mary Jane had just gotten married, so they're about 21, maybe. And Spider-Man currently in comic books these days is approximately about 25, maybe.
Right.
Right. He doesn't seem to be aging as fast as Miles does, because Miles started when he was 13 years old, and he's about a senior in high school now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, aging is just very strange in comic book logic. I think it's, what is it now? Every 1 year for every 15.
Right. Or
So
you look at how long has Franklin Richards been a kid, you know, since like the 60s, he was a baby, and then now
right.
he's supposed to be like what, maybe 15 or 16 years old, but his sister, who has a weird complicated birthing process, she was a stillborn, but she really wasn't. She was transported to a pocket dimension so she could get better, then she came back, but now she's supposed to be like maybe she was only born in like 2005 or so, but she looks like she's being drawn like she's 14 or something like that. Like they're drawing her like they used to draw her like she was like a 10-year-old girl, but now they're
Right.
drawing her like maybe she's like 14 by giving her some definitive features to her body.
Yeah, and it's just one of those.
She's a young woman. Let's just call it that.
Yeah, it's just one of those odd things. And but what can you expect by a woman who is quote unquote delivered by Dr. Doom, and has very much exercised using that relationship whenever it's very necessary for her and her family? It's like, oh hey, Uncle Doom. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, oh yeah, that's a thing. But yeah, it's Fantastic Four. What are you gonna do?
I still think they could do something with Corona. I mean, the whole plot line of her getting revenge against her brother doesn't need to go on and on forever. So, and I think they do wrap that up at the end of this and the Spider-Man Unlimited issue. But they could do something with her being a female superhero. You know, they could use
Yeah.
more of them.
Well, you know what's funny is that this
Hey,
kind
when
of
is she going to
reminded.
get her? She could get her own Sony movie.
Yeah. We've seen how much effort, how much little effort that takes.
Yeah, did you hear what Dakota Fanning said about the not Dakota Fanning, Dakota whatever her name is, about the Madame Web movie?
Yeah, she's concerned.
Yeah, she's like, I've never worked with anything where I was told, okay, explosion, and I'm supposed to jump in the air at the green screen. And I was like, ugh.
Oh boy. But the funny thing with this, Chris, is I wanted to bring up is that this kind of reminds me of a current villain that the superior Spider-Man is dealing with right now. I believe it's Supernova, who used to be like a lackey of Doc Ock, and you know this whole thing, and she there's an accident, she ends up getting superpowers, she gets imprisoned for like I don't know however long the timeline is between Superior and the current Spider-Man, and then she finally gets out. She has an age.
Oh yeah, like we believe it's like a year maybe. It's like, wow, a lot has happened in a year for Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just all of this. And then she comes out, and the first thing she was like, I'm going to get revenge on Spider-Man. And then it's like, it's not the same Spider-Man. I'm like, this is the weirdest excuse for a team-up ever.
Yeah, and like Doc Ock is forcing Peter to become the superior Spider-Man because they're obviously not going to just redo the same story they did before for Doc
Right.
Ock. Gets a clone body, or he takes over Peter's body. I didn't think Dan Slott was. I
I don't
thought
know.
Dan Slott was too smart to do that.
I don't know anymore. I'm reading it, but it's one of those where I'm reading it, but I'm not buying it. So I'm like, all right, it's fine. I'm only wasting my time. You know,
yeah,
15
I'm
minutes.
buying it and reading it because Dan Slott's writing it, and the artwork is by Mark Bagley, and it's incredible. So,
Oh
and
yeah.
it's better than Spider Boy, which I could give two shits about. Sorry,
Yeah.
him and Kid Venom die a horrible, fiery, bloody death, for God's sakes. Why do we need these characters?
Yeah, well, you know what? We could talk about that on another show. So back
Yeah,
to
yeah,
this.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The point of
I'm
bringing
actually going to
that
talk
up.
about that on the Catch Up Amazing Spider-Man show this coming Wednesday. But
There you
the
go.
time this is getting posted, that episode will have been long past. So I digress. Moving on.
But like I said, the similarities. I was like, revenge-driven, super-powered women who happened across Spider-Man. I was
right,
like,
right, right, right. So this
yeah.
thing that afflicts Mary Jane and the woman earlier in the issue is called the Soho Fever.
Yes.
I guess we didn't quite understand what a pandemic was yet in 1991, huh?
No, definitely not. But
Yeah.
it was interesting to see that. I was like, huh, like, okay.
Did you
Like,
notice the Marvel comics and nobody ever touched upon COVID in Marvel?
yeah, they just kind of, it happened. And I'm just like, yeah, well, when you think about the Marvel universe, I feel like COVID is probably the blip on their screen compared to everything they deal with on a daily basis. you know, like invasions and attacks and end of the world schemes. I remember saying to somebody, like, how does anybody sleep in the Marvel universe?
Right. Like, any I second do love Spider-Man mm-hmm. breaking into the building, smashing through the guards, grabbing Cedric and smashing him into the console, probably like breaking his neck, going, we're going to have words. And it's so incredibly out of character for Spider-Man. But because Mary Jane is hurt by his stupidity, it's the reason why.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's always really amusing when you see angry Spider-Man, you know, because it's kind of the same way I think people feel when they see angry Superman. It's just you see the character at its biggest, most fury, and you realize, you know what, these guys could really kill somebody if they really didn't care about it.
Correct.
They'd have a more, you know, they'd have a more thing.
But yeah. The antidote gets smashed and Corona mutates further into now this like goblin-esque female kind of husk. They draw her in a way that makes it look like she's aged up more, her skin has become more like reptilian. They've even like given her the features of like the talons, and also her breasts are sagging, so it's like she's become like an old hag.
Yeah, it was an odd move. It was like I said, it was okay, but this wasn't one of the favorite issues that we've reviewed.
We'll get to issue 177 in a couple seconds. And the inside cover, there's Get Your Game Boy a Taste of Combat Contra Style for Contra C on the Game Boy. There is an advertisement for the Mickey Mantle Baseball Collection. The Nintendo Entertainment G.I. Joe video game. I remember having a lot of fun with this game. It's got a cool image of a guy dressed as Cobra Commander in an incredibly looking Cobra Commander costume in the jungle. Like, that's some serious good advertising money, that you got a good looking Cobra Commander costume like that.
It was that time, Chris.
Yeah, Double Dragon 3 on the Nintendo Entertainment System. The Biomatic Comics collection of advertisements that before you could just go on eBay and look up a comic book that you want to order. or thousands of other websites that are selling comic books as well. The Buy 5 Books for $1 sci-fi ad I remember always seeing. I think this is the first time. It's not listed here, but there's some weird sci-fi books in there. Did you ever call one of these 900 numbers to help Spider-Man save someone, or like this is the X-Men? Help me save Mary Jane. Call 1-800-740-8888.
I think the thing I love when you read those retro ads, because you think, would that number work still? And then I'm like, you think about it, but you're like, I don't want to do it.
You don't want to name it.
No. But I'm always like scared, wondering, like, are these numbers still in service? You know what I mean?
The Bullpen Bulletins has, of course, Stan's soapbox. There's an advertisement for The Deadly Foes of Spider-Man, which was the first miniseries for Spider-Man.
Hey.
First Spider-Man miniseries. There are the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men. They've all had miniseries. Captain America had one, but Spider-Man never had a miniseries before. It launched with Danny Figueroth, Kerry Gamble, and Al Migro. And this was the Sinister Syndicate, which was the Rhino, the Rhino, the Beetle, Hydra-Man, the Shocker. And this was a story, by the way, where the Beetle killed somebody. He actually killed somebody. Right. And then a few years later, Kurt Busiek would pick that plot line up for when Hawkeye took over the Thunderbolts, saying, I'm gonna take over the Thunderbolts, but Beetle has to go to jail for the murder he committed back in the Deadly Foes of Spider-Man.
Wow. Good continuity there.
Good continuity. And in the back of the spectacular Spider-Mail, we have some ads here for, again, Dark Horse number 3 features Spider-Man teaming up with Darkhawk Darkhawk. Darkhawk and Spider-Man in Darkhawk number 3 team up to fight the Hobgoblin. This is the Jason Philip McIndale Hobgoblin still possessed by the demon. Deadly Foes of Spider-Man number 1 and the Spider-Man wedding trade paperback, as well as the Spider-Man saga and the Wolverine saga, which were basically extra thick comic books that basically went into a continuity detail of everything that happened to the character up to this point.
Hey,
And there's also advertisement in here for in the same little hyperama for the Toxic Avenger comic book series based on the cartoon, the Toxic Crusaders.
Dear God.
And then, of
Wow.
course, at the back, you have the subscribe and save with Spider-Man, Iron Man, and the Silver Surfer. 71 cents a copy for a comic book. 71 cents. Could you believe that?
Listen, Chris, I can't believe the prices some of these people are charging for these new, like these now hot in demand comics. Like I think I was just talking to a friend of mine who's trying to find a hard copy of the Ultimate Spider-Man by Hickman and Cecchetto that just came out. That was a big hit for Marvel. And he said people are selling it for like $100. And you're
Oh
thinking,
my God.
that's what I'm saying. And the book itself is $5.99. So you're like, wow, what
That's
the hell?
the it's the same thing with every issue of the Energon Universe's Transformers, Cobra Commander number one, and Duke number one, and the Void Rivals comics. They're sold out. They're in multiple printings.
Jeez.
I mean,
Yeah.
the Cobra Commander issue sold out so fast.
Yeah, and you recommended that to me. You said that it was really good. I haven't got a chance to read it, but I definitely added it to my list to read. So,
If you were a fan
yeah.
of G.I. Joe, the movie, you would like Cobra Commander number one.
Okay. Hey, listen, good advertisement there.
Yeah, G.I. Joe, the animated movie, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah,
Good, good. Yeah, in
with Cobra
specific.
Law. So,
Yeah.
why don't we move on to issue 177?
Okay. All right. So all right, everybody. So this is synopsis for Spectacular Spider-Man 177. Again, writer is Kurt Busiek. Penciler is and inker is Sal Buscema. Colorist is Joe Rosas. Letterer is Rick Parker. No, letterer is Rick Parker. Yeah, and editor Danny Fingeroth. Tom DeFalco is of course the supervising editor and said such. And continuing on what we've seen, Corona and Spider-Man are duking it out. Corona is, of course, convinced that Spider-Man is in league with her brother for withholding the cure. But of course, that whole thing just becomes a big, aggravated, long battle that eventually ends with Spider-Man unconscious and Corona fleeing. Peter returns to the hospital where Mary Jane is undergoing treatment for Soho fever. We learn more about Peter helping Corona breaking into Forrester's building, who reveals that the cure is only essentially going to be taken to complete a transformation and gain more power. The antidote is destroyed. Of course, we learn that not only is Mary Jane affected, but his old friends, Norman and Liz Osborne, their son Normie is also infected. And this, of course, Harry is dealing with his own shit. Very intense hallucinations, talking to him. I think he's been plagued by his dad and now Spider-Man. We're back to Cedric Forster, the most intelligent douche we've seen so far. He's dealing with a ton of heat from everybody. But of course, everyone wants a cure. And he is just trying to manipulate it to where he can still be on top. He is notified that Spider-Man is looking to speak to him, and Spider-Man brings Harry to help recreate the cure. Forster's, of course, a snob because Spider-Man couldn't get Reed Richards or Henry Pym. You see, Corona is essentially breaks into ESU to trying to get to their field accelerator chamber, breaking up a lovely little demonstration on campus, by the way. Harry is getting to work, in which in time we find out that Spider-Man has Soho fever. Oh my God, no what? Around this time, of course, Corona is there. Corona blows the roof off. They're doing this whole fighting. And mind you, Spider-Man is still sick, by the way. So while Corona and Spider-Man are fighting, Cedric's, of course, ordering his men to capture his sister while he's still working with Harry. And in the end, Spider-Man essentially tries to appeal to Corona's whatever good nature is left in her, saying that if she helps them find a cure, he'll make sure that she isn't hurt or imprisoned. Basically, was saying, hey, if I'm lying, you can take me down right now. So she actually agrees to help. They ambush her, his guards. Cedric's, of course, still a jerk. And Spider-Man tries to catch up to Corona, who's decided she's going to essentially kill herself. He saves her life. More ambush, more betrayal. Finally, an antidote is created. So, you know, Reed, of course, Reed Richards and the Fantastic Four show up after getting Spider-Man's emergency call, which he got before he blacked out and then was cured. In the end, Cedric Forrester presents Reed Richards with a court order that puts his sister's care in his hands. Legality is essentially what's working. Apparently, this quick cure made Cedric a hero. Spider-Man can only watch in anger as Cedric and his minions take Corona away. Everybody who was a victim of this Soho fever has been cured, including Mary Jane. So Peter is pissed, but Mary Jane's trying to take him to look at the light of it. The Osborns are happy, but of course, at the end, Harry is confronted with a startling hallucination of who's speaking to him that chills him to the bone. And that's issue 177, everyone.
Right. So let's go right to that plot just real quick, because it is at the very end of the issue. Harry, hearing the voice of his father, is part of his drug hallucinations, which I think it gets explained off eventually in the Osborn journals.
Yes.
Because the there's also a miniseries coming out starting in, I think, March by J.M.D. Mateus called Legacy of Osborn, Legacy of Evil.
Yes.
Another one of these legacy of something another that has happened. Because if you're reading current issues of Amazing Spider-Man, Norman Osborn is slowly reverting back to his his Green Goblin persona. Obviously, they were never going to keep him a good guy forever. But no. I guess. So the ghost of Norman Osborn is not haunting Harry. It is his drug hallucinations because of the goblin formula in his system which is causing it. Because Osborn is currently living in Europe with the Scryer cult as of right now. They even, by the way, had a storyline where Norman Osborn and Doc Ock met up when the world both believed them to be dead.
Oh.
It was told by the superior Spider-Man that one time while he was, after he got killed by Kane, the spider clone, he went on, when he came back or something, he was dead. At one point he was dead. It was maybe not the Kane storyline because he was dead. He was actually dead during that. Yeah. But there was a storyline where the world believed Doc Ock to be dead, but he had faked it. And he ran into Norman Osborn and he agreed to keep Norman secret. But I digress. Anyway, cool to see the Fantastic Four show up ever so briefly. Of course, they weren't able to be part of the major, larger storyline. But with this running around to try and find a cure within like a matter of days, the whole thing screams of the 1990s movie Outbreak a lot more than current COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, it's really impressive that they were able to do it all in one issue. But I mean, I still feel like it was Kurt Busiek was juggling a lot, and I just feel like certain stories I cared more about than the others. Like it was, I was like, oh, okay, Norman's like, oh, okay, Harry's still nuts, but you know, his kid is sick, so okay, cool. And then this back and forth, but I mean, holy crap, the villain of this is not Corona, I think it's her brother. I mean, what an asshole. You save the world, you manipulate it, so you're going to keep your sister under your cares where you're going to experiment and likely torture her, and nobody else can intercede because you've had the courts. I mean, I guess we found the real villain that the Marvel can't defeat. It's the legality of the court system. Like, I'll take on Galactus, but oh man, a court order, can't do it. It was funny. That was an unexpected ending. But I digress, as you say.
What do you think of the artwork compared to the last issue?
It was, you know, again, Sal always does good work. Even if I feel that it's a little rushed, his work is still phenomenal to look at. And honestly, this whole time reviewing with you has made me really appreciate Sal's work as an artist, and he really did so much for the character in terms of it. Like, to me, I feel like he contributed as much to Spider-Man as the Romitas. He was just beautiful, especially with expression. His expressions are top-notch. So, yeah. But, yeah, so...
Yeah, all of the expressions, the elongated, like, long mouth open expressions that we get from everybody, I think is pretty great. A lot of times when people are screaming when Sal's artwork is being shown, it's fantastic. I did love the fact that they obviously, Kurt obviously had some memo from the Spider office that something had to be set up for Harry, because it introduced to show Liz and Normie and Norman, Liz, Normie, and Harry in this issue, but no connection to about what is about to happen would have been kind of dumb. Him teaming up with Spider-Man just to turn around and him like want to kill Peter, it would have been so frustrating. Just to be like, obviously there was some disconnect between the two writers for this to take place. But thank God they got that teaser at the very end. Do you remember right after Hal Jordan's Coast City was destroyed? It's an issue between the Reign of Superman issue and then the Emerald Twilight storyline.
Yeah.
So there was an issue with Green Lantern and Green Arrow, like having like a heart to heart, kind of like a homage back to their old, like, you know, Heroes on the Road days.
The hard traveling heroes.
Hard traveling heroes, right. And then it says, like, you know, next issue, a new beginning or something like that. Like, Green Lantern's going to go off. They're going to do that story again. They're going to do the hard traveling heroes for Green Lantern to reconstitute himself and get back to who he was because he just lost everything. And, you know, he's going to go on the road with Green Arrow. No, he's going to go nuts and kill the Guardians and kill all the Corps.
Yeah, and become parallel. It was just, it was such a, actually, we're going to go this way. And I was just like, oh, okay, we're gonna do that. Okay. That's no one saw that coming. But you know, that was a time of DC where everything is, well, everything was light and breezy. Now we're going dark. I'm like, yep. Nothing says dark like destroying almost everything you built and starting fresh. But back to this, you know. You gotta love two issues, Chris, that we cured a sickness. I was like, boy, if only the real world was that fast.
Despite what happened to Corona and the fact that Cedric takes her away and that plot gets resolved in the Spider-Man Unlimited issue I mentioned earlier, Mary Jane's still like, you did a good job, Tiger, no matter what, even though you let a woman basically just get misogynized by her brother.
But
she's also kind of a piece of shit herself, and she's very dangerous. And if he has the means to take care of her, despite how he's treating her, it's like, I don't. It's honestly, she should be in the care of the Fantastic Four.
Totally. I mean, you know, look at their track record. They're pretty good at helping cure people under their care, because Reed Richards is a scientist first. You know.
Because Ben Grimm has been cured.
You know what? Mistakes were made. That's all I'm going to say. Mistakes were made. Plot points were left for the convenience of nostalgia, and that's all I'm going to say.
He can't cure his best friend. He doesn't know how to cure blindness either, because otherwise he could have probably cured Alicia's blind problem, which, by the way, she wasn't born blind. She got blinded by radiation from the Puppet Master's clay, if you remember.
Again, Chris, we've seen very much that Reed Richards, while being one of the world's smartest men, is not perfect. Let's look at his marriage. So he did his best. But back to this, like you said, I feel like if we charged a penny for every time Spider-Man's good nature has caused a supervillain or some sort of character to get the best of him, me and you could easily go to San Diego Comic-Con together and still have money to spare. So, like I said, it ended as well as it could. You know, in true Spider-Man fashion, he won and lost at the same time, and you left with that cliffhanger for the future stories. So, all in all, again, is it my favorite? No, but still pretty good. you know? So that's just me. So
coming up in March, from Greg Wiseman, who is the creator of Gargoyles, we have a new spectacular comic book starting, the Spectacular Spider-Men, with Spider-Man and Miles teaming up for a book, which is interesting because we've never had that before, and they've always been their pretty much own separate titles, doing their separate thing, once in a while team up. But I'm actually looking forward to this because Roberto Ramos is also the artist on the book. So not a book we'll be covering here on the network, but I just wanted to point out there is a new Spectacular Spider-Men book coming very soon. Again, by Roberto Ramos and Greg Wiseman, creator of Gargoyles.
Absolutely. And on top of it, he was one of the main writers for the Spectacular Spider-Man TV show, which I was a huge fan of. And
yeah, really... that's, yeah, so he's got some spectacular history.
Absolutely. I see what you did there, Chris. No, it's super great. I mean, the last time we've seen them teamed up was the Spider-Man series, which was, remember, back in the Ultimate Spider-Man days, where you had the mainstream Peter teaming up with Miles in the Ultimate Universe. That there's only two of those, but it's just a great book. So to see them working together again, and I think their first enemy is going to be the Jackal, and I'm like, oh no,
oh no,
yeah. I was like, oh. Clones.
Drew, where can people find you?
I'm on Facebook. You can look at me, Drew Mollo, on Facebook. I'm Ghostbusterman 1984 on Instagram. I'm no longer working with Screen Rant, but I am working on trying to find somewhere else that I